Hello, everybody. Welcome to On The Ropes. We're bringing you another lockdown special, and we're so pleased to say this week we're joined on the show by Ted Big Cheese Cheeseman. Ted is a current professional. He's held the WBA international title, the British super welterweight title from 2018 to 2019, and challenged already for the European super welterweight title in February 2019. Ted, welcome to On The Ropes, and how are you keeping over lockdown?
Yeah, thanks a lot, mate. And enjoying spending a bit of time with my family and making the best out of a bad situation.
Yeah, and Ted, just really want to move on to the interview now, and we like to strip it back to the very, very beginning with our guests. Firstly, where did you grow up and why did you choose boxing?
I grew up in Bermondsey, and one of my mate's mums asked me when I was 12 years old to come down the gym with her son, and then from then I never looked back. I always played football before then, but I got hooked by boxing and never changed since.
Hi Ted, it's Charlie here.
You right?
Yeah, all good, mate. You?
Yeah, all good.
Good man. Thanks for joining us today. Really appreciate your time.
So,
you mentioned their football. Now, it seems like it's quite a common trend with boxers that, you know, initially try football out because it's a team sport, and then once they enter that gym, you know, the individual sport, the achievement, the satisfaction, you know, of stepping through those ropes and winning a bout. I mean, was that what hooked you initially to the sport of boxing?
Yeah, 100%. You ain't got to rely on no one else. With football, you do. So everything you do and train for, you reap the full reward for.
And Ted, obviously growing up in Bermondsey, you just have to ask this question. What team did you follow or do you follow now? I mean, growing up in South London.
I always followed Millwall because I went down there with a lot of my mates, had a lot of good times there, and it was a laugh, and they ain't done too bad, really, but they're not the greatest, but they're doing all right.
Yeah, funny enough, we grew up just the other side of the tunnel, really, and one of our mates is a big Millwall fan. He actually played for the Millwall as well, and all his family and parents and are all Millwall fans. So yeah, it's not just South London. The fans are, you know, you do get a few fans in the East End as well.
Yeah, definitely.
Also, Ted, I mean, you box for Fisher Athletic, a great club with a great history and pedigree. I mean, looking back in your career, how many amateur bouts did you have, and did you win any national titles along the way?
I had 61 fights, winning 50 of them. And I won 6 national titles, 2 Three Nations gold medals, got to the quarterfinals of World Games. I represented England 10 times, and I captained England against Ireland in a rep match.
And I mean, what was that like, Ted? You know, for a lot of young lads, you know, representing their country is you know, one of their biggest achievements. I mean, how did that feel? Obviously, not only, you know, wearing a vest, but captaining the side as well. I mean, that must have been amazing.
Yeah, it's a great achievement, but obviously until you really talk about it now, you don't really look back at it too much. You're always looking forward. And it's a mad thing, I think, with all of our sportsmen. We're always just looking for the next thing, next thing, next thing. And we never really dwell back on stuff. So it's a bit of a weird feeling, really.
And Ted, you left school quite an early age, from what I gather. Was your intention always to turn pro at a young age?
Not at the start. Obviously, I always had ambitions to go to the Olympic Games, but then I started getting around pro gyms and sparring pro somebody at about the age of 14, 15. And then my ambition changed, and it was to become world champion as a professional boxer. So that's where it all changed.
I mean, you're still only 24, Ted, which is, you know, relatively young in the sport. It does feel like you've been around a long time. You know, you've certainly been on the scene. You know, last couple of years, your name's really springboarded into the public domain. And when you decided to turn pro, you went with Matchroom and Eddie Hearn. I mean, why Matchroom? And then obviously you hooked up with Tony Sims, who seems like he's worked wonders with you. You know, why those guys?
But yeah, Tony's a great man, he's a great teacher plus mentor. And obviously when I got the opportunity to go down the spa, down Tony's gym, and then for him to have a look at me, and he decided he'd give me the option to train with him and Simon Matthew, I had to take that offer. So it's just gone on from there.
And just moving on to the turning professional, I mean, as you touched on there, you went with Eddie and Tony Sims. Your first professional fight, you fought Gabor Abros at London's O2, which is a home tie for you, so to speak. I mean, what was that experience like then?
It was a great experience because, obviously, as an amateur, you box in little sports halls and leisure centres and stuff, except for when you go international, sometimes you get some good venues. But it was a great experience, and obviously, fighting at a higher level as an amateur, you always know, as long as you perform, you're gonna win your pro debut, unless you got stitched up. And it was just a great learning experience, great experience to look back on for the rest of my life.
And after turning pro, I mean, you went on an amazing run, 12 unbeaten, before the chance, you know, arose to fight the vastly experienced American Carlson Jones for the WBA international belt. I mean, you won that on a unanimous decision, and you know, like we alluded to earlier, you know, you're still relatively young. Sounds like you fear nobody. I mean, how did that feel at that particular moment in time?
I think with the management team and with Tony behind me, obviously, I was learning a lot, and I felt I was ready for the opportunity. So when the opportunity came along, I grabbed it with both hands, and I just knew Carson Jones, obviously, look, in his day, he was a great fighter, but obviously now, he's probably a bit past his best, and I'm probably a bit too sharp and fit for him. So I knew as long as I performed, I'd have a bit too much for him, and I did. And to be honest, sometimes I look back on it and think that I should have tried to push for the stoppage. But I boxed really well there, and it was a good breakout fight for me, because then that's when everyone knew I was going to push on.
And Ted, talking about impressive displays, you went on to defend the WBA international belt against local lad, really, Paulie Upson. He's actually been a previous presenter on our show. Knocked him out in the fourth round at your call. You were both undefeated that night. I mean, you boxed exceptionally well that night.
Yeah, I put in a really good performance that night, and obviously, I always believed I was much better and levels above Paulie Upton, but he had a good record at the time, but he had never fought no one like I had. And I just thought I was in the world too good for him. But maybe, looking at it, if people didn't believe that he could beat me and stuff, I may not have trained as hard, knowing I felt like I was comfortably beaten. But because a lot of people started doubting me and thinking it's going to be a really hard test, I trained really hard and put on a great performance. And I did show exactly what I thought, and that I was levels above him when the knockout came. To be honest, he could have been stopped a bit earlier in that round, but it showed he's really tough and really game. But I showed I was levels above him.
And then after the Paulie Upton fight, Isaiah Byfield begins to call you out, really. And you both get a shot at the vacant British Super Welt title. I mean, the fight took place at the Copper Box. A great display from you again. You win the belt on a unanimous decision. I mean, what was that like? Just 23 years of age, you're a British champion. What was that like?
Yeah, it's mad because you never ever think it's going to happen that quick, obviously, that young. But obviously, a lot of people was avoiding me. A lot of people was avoiding the senior. He offered the fight and tried to call us out before the Carlson Jones fight. And when that fight was made, I said, look, can we forget the Carlson Jones fight? Get me this senior Byfield. But then obviously Charlie said to me, look, let's just wait our time. That fight will come. But when there's something better on the line. And it was exactly right. And then when it did come, I was really up for it. And I knew a senior Byfield was a really good boxer. So as long as I just needed to put the pressure on him, keep the pressure on him and be really fit. And I did, and he couldn't sort of keep my pressure. And people don't think that he was a hard puncher, but Isaiah Byfield was quite a big puncher. But I grinded him down, and I bullied him, and he didn't think I was going to keep up the pace I did. But I was really fit, and it was a great achievement for me to win a British title. It's a big thing now forever in boxing. I'll be in the history of the British title winners.
Yeah, it's an amazing achievement, and like we know, at 23, you know, and I don't want to be patronising, in terms of boxing, you know, you're still a baby, and,
You know, from then, it appears that you fear no one, because since you won that British title, you're then back at the O2 headlining this time for a European shot versus Sergio Garcia. I mean, so it shows that you've got some, you know, you've got some cojones, because there's no fear there. You step into a gruesome 12-round fight. You lost on points. I mean, and Garcia surprised everyone, you know, not only on the television, but obviously in the arena itself. I mean, he boxed really well. I mean, but obviously on that night, you know, were your tactics wrong? Was things going on outside the ring? You know, you seemed to take a lot of big blows that, you know, you couldn't have really taken.
Yeah, the thing is, I always knew, but the thing was, I'd been battling the addiction for a long time before that, you know what I mean? But my head was gone, and I should have performed a lot better, but obviously by that time it had got to me, and I performed terrible, and I always believe in my head now. I've got a lot of regrets, because I feel if I was fully fit and fully had my head right and performed well, I've got all the tools to beat Sergio Garcia, but if not, give myself the best chance of winning against Garcia. But I will always regret that for the rest of my career, and I hope that in the future I'll get a chance to try and reverse that fight. But I just got to push on with what I'm doing, get on with what I'm doing, and hopefully we knock heads again further down the line.
Yeah, and Ted, you touched on briefly there, you did have a gambling addiction. I mean, not many of our listeners might realise this leading up to the Garcia bout, and even post the Garcia bout. You actually recognised you did have a problem. I mean, during this period of you going through all of this, who would you say really helped you? I mean, it takes a brave man to make a decision and, you know, and announce that they have a problem. I mean, who actually helped you through this difficult period?
Tony helped me a lot through it, and my family supported me through it. But it was a really hard period, and obviously, I could have walked away from boxing a lot of times, and I could have carried on gambling. But I pushed on and I carried on. And that was the main thing I had to do. I had to get past it, recover from it. And I do feel I'm recovered now. Obviously, you're always in recovery, but I do feel I'm recovered now a lot better than what I could ever be. And I'm in a really good mental state. I mean, I'm training really hard. I was just about to fight before this pandemic, but obviously this mucked it up, but I'm a year older, I'm a year wiser, I've learnt more for a year, and I just feel when I come back, I'm just going to be a lot more mature, and I've learnt a lot, I've had a lot of big fights, and I'm just looking forward to getting back in the ring now, and actually putting myself back on the map, showing everyone how good I can be.
Well, it takes a brave man to, you know, not only realise the problem that they have, but obviously speak out about it. You know, it's certainly at such a young age. So, you know, again, you've got some cojones to do that, and well done for that. I mean, during, obviously since then, you know, you got back to boxing. You know, you were back out for the British title. You know, Kieran Conway was your opponent. A really, really tough fight. I mean, you were bang up for it and you boxed really well. You know, Conway's a slick operator, you can see that. But controversy again arose with the decision. I mean, and you didn't seem too happy, you know, after that fight. I mean, how did you feel after the fight, even though, you know, you'd won it?
I felt like I come back from recovering, sorting myself out, putting myself in a better place, performed really well, and then I never got what I wanted, you know what I mean? Obviously, like, you can push on, and which I did, but it's just, I didn't felt like I was treated fairly. Yeah. And obviously, you just have to move on from there. And the thing is, I look on stuff, if you dwell on stuff, you'll let it beat you. But if you sort of deal with it and try and come back stronger, you can always beat it. You always give yourself another chance.
Yeah, I mean, in that fight, Ted, I mean, in my view, from round 8 onwards, you pulled away and you won the fight. I mean, the judges had the scorecards at 116 to 113 for Conway, 115 to 114 in your favour, and a draw at 114 to 114.
Yeah.
At that time, How did you feel with the decision? In my view, you'd won that fight.
Yeah, I just felt like everyone was against me, obviously, because I'd come out and stuff. But I don't know. Like, I was in a bad place, in a good place, in a bad place, and so it was like a yo-yo. But now I'm in a much better place, and I've just got to forget about them sort of things, just use it as experience.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and after the Conway fight, you travelled to Newcastle to face Scott Fitzgerald in October last year and to defend your British title. I mean, this fight surely left you questioning the boxing game, I'm sure of this. Different tactics this night, Ted, from you. You boxed 12 rounds. Not only did you box beautifully, but you find that you get to the 12th round, decision time, judges score it, a unanimous win for Fitzgerald, who really only woke up in the last four rounds of the fight, in my opinion. The judges scored it that night, unanimously, as I said, for Fitzgerald, 115 to 113, 116 to 113, and 116 to 113. I can't imagine what it was like hearing this in the ring that night, but, you know, can you just sum up your emotions for us as a scorecard to announce?
To be honest, still to now, I have some points where some nights and some mornings and after training and stuff, and I think, you know what, I'm never boxing again. I can't bother that. I hate this sport. But I think as a recovering addict of gambling, I've got addictions in a lot of stuff. You know what I mean? Obviously, but you use certain stuff. Some of them are good. Some of them need to be controlled. And I think boxing is partly an addiction. And the thing is, as much as I sometimes feel I can get out of it and I want to get out of it, but I love the sport. But then sometimes I hate it. Sometimes I love it. It's a mad thing. It's a mad feeling. And on the night, sort of, I hated everyone in it, the sport, and hated everything about it. And all I thought is, I'm done. I'm not giving my all again for that to happen. No matter what I'm doing, it ain't working for me. But obviously, it's been a long while now since then. And again, I've got older, I'm maturer, and I'm in a lot better place. And I've got that bit of drive back. I think the pandemic helped me a bit, because sometimes you can't have a break from boxing and being around it all the time. And this time I got a chance to have a bit of time with my family, miss boxing a bit. And I have missed boxing. I'm really got the grip back in my teeth to push on and get to where I need to be.
I mean, that's fantastic to hear, because that was going to be my question. You know, at that point, did you honestly feel you were going to turn your back on the sport? But then on the flip side, you mentioned that the break has done you good to reset, to think things over. And just think, you know, the experiences you've gained in these decisions, in these bouts, you know, and you're only 24, Ted. So hopefully, you know, now that you've reset during the COVID-19 break, you know, you can kick on again, you know, hopefully 2019, you know, we're going to get back to boxing soon, we hope, and then into 2020, you know. So, I mean, future plans, you know, what are they? What would you like for 2019?
2020, yeah. I'm hopefully boxing in
2020,
hopefully I'll box in the matchroom behind closed doors events. And obviously, I don't think no one's going to have easy fights, so I'll be in half decent fight. And then if I win that, I'll be pushing on for a massive fight, hopefully, before the end of the year. So it's probably done me a favour a bit here, because no one's going to be able to have easy fights, no one's going to be able to hide. So there's no running from no one. You've just got to get on with it. And obviously, you're either going to sink or swim, and I'm hopefully coming out swimming.
And Ted, obviously, during lockdown, I guess you keep yourself fit. You touched on that. You might be on the Matchroom Behind Closed Doors show. Thinking further ahead, I mean, Fitzgerald, the rematch, or, you know, what are your big plans? Or would you even consider fighting someone like Anthony Fowler?
Yeah, I'd love the rematch with, obviously, Scott Fitzgerald. But to be honest, the main thing for me is, when the time is right for management team and my coach, is to get that British title back before the end of this year. And then by the start of next year, start looking to push on again towards European level when I'm further on, because obviously it'll be by next year, the start of next year, it'll be 2 years on from when I first challenged for the European title. And I believe I'll definitely be ready then. And I'll definitely be ready to push on. I'd have learned all what I need. I've picked up the experience, like what I need. I know what I've got to do to win at that level and how the opponents are going to be at that level. So all I need to do is just get the opportunities now.
I mean, you know, hopefully boxing does return in July. I mean, what's your take on, you know, if it does return and you know, behind closed doors? I mean, how would that feel for a boxer? Because, you know, you're used to the adrenaline of the fans. You know, how would that be, do you think?
I don't really know. Obviously, you're never going to know, are you, until it actually happens. But we're fighters, and all the main thing, it don't matter about no crowd, it don't matter about no nothing. All it matters about is when you and him are in the ring and getting the win. And I think that's the main thing. Everything's the same, but there ain't no crowd. And if you're relying on a crowd to win, you're in a bit of trouble, really. So it don't matter if 1,000 people come watch me or one person comes to watch me. I'm going to try my hardest to win. That's the main thing.
Yeah, see, one of the things that, you know, it goes over in my mind during the pandemic and obviously on lockdown, you know, you can train to a certain degree. You can obviously keep your distance. But to get ready for bouts, you know, let's just say we're going to come back in July. You know, sparring is pivotal in the build-up in camp, right? And I mean, how's it going to work? Obviously, you can only do a little bit of light sparring, but, you know, you need full contact sparring, really, don't you, to get match ready, really?
I think once the gym's open, in the next few weeks, hopefully, there'll be, like, obviously, if we're allowed in our gym, there'll be in our sparring room. We'll be able to be full contact sparring. We've got a lot of good fighters around each other's weights, so hopefully, well, I'll be fine. You know what I mean? I think everyone will be fine. We'll all sort it out somehow. And either way, you fought for all them years. I don't think a few weeks missing out in sparring is going to hurt too much.
Yeah, and obviously the boxer's safety is paramount as well. So I would imagine that every single gym would have the COVID tests done. You'd only spar with, you know, boxers that have been tested negative, for example.
Yeah, we all went and had a test Friday at separate times, so it's all clear. So that's good, all good news.
So very, very good news. And Ted, as we conclude now on the end of the show, really, one last question that we like to finish with. And I know you're a relatively young man. You have, you know, as Charlie touched on earlier, you've been in the game what would appear to have been quite a few years now. But in your career to date, or even in your life to date, what would you say has been your biggest achievement so far?
My biggest achievement was fighting, I think, against Sergio Garcia, top of the bill at the O2 Arena. And not because, even though I lost, it's a big thing to top the bill at the O2 Arena. It's a massive thing, you know what I mean? You've got the likes of Drake performing there. All the big, like, celebrities and stars performed there and topped that bill at that arena, and I had the chance to do that. So that was a really big achievement for me.
I guess winning the Lonsdale belt, would that be second to that, do you think?
Yeah, definitely. But obviously, it, like, when you look at stuff, to go back on stuff, obviously the Lonsdale belt's always going to be a great achievement. But to a lot of people who don't know boxing or nothing, you can say, if you said to them that you performed at the O2 Arena and you was top head of the bill, like you was the main performance, that I think anyone will realise it's a big achievement.
It was certainly being a local lad as well, Ted, you know. Not only obviously passing it every day from the outside, but like you said, you know, just being in there and topping a bill, you know, it's something that you can tell, obviously, your children, your grandchildren, you know, all your family connected. I mean, it must have been an amazing feeling.
Yeah, definitely. Obviously, I wish I was in a better mental state at the time, because I never really soaked much up as what I would have, what I'd like to, because I was just my head weren't. But it's still something to say, whether no matter what, I think that was my best night in boxing anyway, because it made me be able to admit my problems and sort them out. So it's a blessing in disguise, in other words.
Yeah, and I was going to say also, Ted, I mean, your career. It sounds like you're rebuilding your career. And who's to say that you won't go on and win that European belt? You know, go on and become a world champion. So I think those big nights are still there for you. And
you know, definitely.
I'd love to see you go and grab them.
Yeah, I hope so too. And there's a lot of massive fighters who've gone and lost their second fight. He got the likes of Anthony Crollow, who went and won a world title. We lost five or six fights. Derry Matthews. A lot of big fighters who have done it. Ricky Burns from our own gym. Lost five or six fights, but was three-weight world champion. So it's all about using it as experience. If you don't use it as experience, a lot of people get wrapped up on being unbeaten all the time. But now, hopefully, it will help me get the better opportunities, as people don't think. People might take you as more of a soft touch, but not realise that the mental state you're in at the time, and not realise that really and truly, I should only have one defeat in my own mind. I should only have one defeat. I should have 17 wins and one loss. But obviously, that in a way, but in the future, that may help me. So we'll soon see.
Yeah, well, people who think, you know, what I find intriguing with you, Ted, is people thought that you were a one-trick pony. You know, you just love to scrap. You come with your head out, you know, wanting to scrap, keep coming forward. Well, against Fitzgerald, you proved a lot of people wrong, you know, that you showed that you can actually box. You're good on your feet, you know, your movement, your lateral movement, your jabbing was superb. So I think moving forward, people won't know how to read you. And I think, you know, I think you will come back stronger for it.
Yeah, 100%, because I've always been able to box like that since 12, 13 years old. For most of my amateur, I boxed on my back foot. But obviously, as I said, when you're not in the right mental state, you're not fighting with your brain, you're fighting with your heart. And when I fought for Scott Fitzgerald, I fought with my brain. And now I think for going on from now, I'll always be able to use and fight my brain. So when I need to fight, I can fight. When I need to box, I can box. So, and I've got all that experience of boxing without being 100%. So while I'm 100%, while my head's right, I know there's not many people I can't beat.
Well, listen, Ted, we could honestly spend the next hour talking with you and your experiences so far. But first and foremost, I'd like to thank you from On The Ropes and everyone at Phoenix 98FM for joining us today. And we wish you the very best health, firstly, and all the very best for the future in your boxing career. And we really do appreciate your time today.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks a lot. All the best to you, too.
Thank you, Ted. Take care.
All right. Speak to you soon. Bye, mate.